This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the pretty fly for a white guy voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon, good morning, where are we? Actually, midday, near enough, so we'll say afternoon. Bank holiday special.
A bank holiday special, yes, of course there are games taking place this week, but with all the action, all the fast, the frenetic, the furious action that has just taken place over the weekend, with much having been decided for those going up, for those going down, for potential clean sheet club winners, we thought we'd do one now.
Absolutely. Good timing. And yet, pretty fly for a white guy.
Yes. Who sang that song?
That was... I'm singing the song to myself now. Dun, 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 dun. Who sang it? Go on.
It was The Offspring.
Ah, I see what you're doing there, because I know what we're going to talk about. Clever, clever. So I am in Dubai at the moment. I had my parents come visit for a few days. And so, it was an interesting few days.
In what way?
No, it was great. It was great for them to be here. In the way that, so they haven't seen Dubai before properly, necessarily. So in the build-up, I was thinking of some nice things to do, and there's obviously lots to do in Dubai. And then with a few days before they're coming, my dad made a real point, look, don't book anything, don't do anything. We're very happy to entertain ourselves. We're just coming to see you. You know, you don't need to worry about going to too much effort. So I was like, oh, okay. So I cancelled all reservations. Anyway, day one, my mum is incredibly bored because we're not really doing much at that point. And I'm kind of thinking, well, I had so much booked. And you actually said, no, we just want to chill by the pool and just relax for a few days. So I think I managed to salvage it day two and day three. So I took them to a few different areas, went for a couple of nice lunches, coffees and stuff like that. So in the end, it was positive, but it was certainly touch and go for the first day. If I was to give myself a grade after day one, I think I was an E at best. But I think in the end, I managed to get maybe a B minus, I think.
Parents can be tough like that sometimes, can't they? Because they'll say they don't want to do anything when really they do want to do something. And sometimes when you organise something to do and you say, okay, do you want to do that? They'll go, okay, that sounds fine. Instantly, you know, they're not up for that. But they're not going to tell me that they're not up for it. So now I'm on edge because I know that they're not really up for it. So do I change my plans? And now I'm anxious and now I'm annoyed and they're annoyed because it's not what they really want to do. So if they were just up front from the outset, if you said, we're going to go to this restaurant and your mum or your dad said, I don't want to go there, at least you then know and then you can organise something else.
Exactly that. Didn't help as well that they get there quite late on the first night. And again, they were welcome to stay at mine, but my parents being my parents, they stayed in the hotel down the road, no problem at all. Anyway, they get into the hotel room. Apparently, it stinks of smoke. My dad doesn't sleep a wink, et cetera. So you know, and I know the moment I'm picking them up, they're shattered. I was on the back foot, I felt, to begin. And then it was like, oh, so what have you planned for us today? Like, well, nothing. Absolutely nothing. We'll just chill. You get to see the dogs. You get to see a bit of Dubai. I soon realized after day one, and it was like frantically thinking of ideas to do for day two and day three. But as I said, without doing anything overly extraordinary, went on a bit of a drive, went to a few different places, an outlet mall, a couple of the really nice hotels. And yeah, no, it was good. It was good in the end, but it was difficult. Because then you're also thinking, as you say, there's so many things to do. But then what would they enjoy? You know, I'd love to go to a water park, but you don't really take your parents to a water park, you know? So it was just trying to figure out what would they enjoy. And in the end, it was, I managed to take them actually to a place where they're playing a lot of like 70s and 80s music. And I didn't know they would, but that was perfect. That really worked out well. I felt like I lucked out and that really sort of turned the tide, you know?
Well, if we can bring this back to goalkeeping then. You said there you were on the back foot. I suppose this is akin to misplacing a pass early doors, maybe just making a little mistake at the beginning of a game, and sometimes just thinking that you go and need to chase it, but instead just keeping that cool, calm and collected head.
I see what you've done there, and that is a lovely analogy. Very good. Analogy or metaphor? Always get mixed up between the two, but we'll go analogy. But yeah, it is that, like a mistake early in the game. And I've had that where it's then you're kind of thinking, oh, I just wish the game would end now, but it won't end now. You've got to play the 90 minutes. So of course, it's then getting your mindset right and giving the best you can for the rest of the game and then assessing afterwards. You know, so now that I've got a bit of time to myself, they did go early this morning. So now that they have left, I can now assess my performance and work on the things that I didn't do particularly well, be pleased with the things that did go well, and then look to be that much better next time.
Excellent. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, we are going to start with your old boys, Richard. Brentford 2, Nottingham Forest 1. And Keylor Navas, another busy game for him. It feels like it's been busy ever since he signed for Nottingham Forest. We actually had a tweet in from @HighFiveCat about this one, who says, "Hey GK Union, I was listening to the radio following Saturday's Premier League games. Everyone to a man was slating Keylor Navas for two shocking clangers against Brentford, even the Forest fans." Katz says that he saw them on Match of the Day that night. Not a chance he's at fault for either of them. Jokers.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'd have to agree. Do you know what? For me, this is one where, and look, if you're going to look at both, obviously looking at the free kick, first and foremost, the fact that it's gone through the wall that he's placed there in order to block exactly a shot like that, they clearly haven't done their job. Now, at that point, the only reason that he will be questioned is the fact that he's managed to get two hands to it. But it's always very difficult when you're moving to your left. You're diving back on yourself slightly because of the trajectory of the ball. To try and then scoop it around the post is quite a difficult skill to do. So it's another one of those for me, which, is it savable? Yes. Is it a mistake? No. That would be that one. And the second one, I just think it's difficult when there's that many bodies in front of you. And again, this will be where you'll look at it and give quite basic punditry, which is he's been done at his near post. Yes, he has. But of course, there is so much more. You imagine putting yourself in his shoes at that moment with what you can see. Effectively, if he can't see the ball being struck, which he probably can't, he's only seeing it a couple of yards away from him, by which point you just haven't got the time to get down and react to your left-hand side. So it kind of takes away, it negates the whole near post, far post, you know, because the same thing happens, but it goes the other side of him. No one says anything because it's gone to the far post effectively, or that's how it's seen. But again, it doesn't really matter whether it's near post or far post. If you've got such little time to react, then there's very, very little you can do. And I think that that wasn't taken into consideration at all when analysing this goal.
So they did lose the game, Nottingham Forest. They were 1-0 up in that one, but they did win in midweek, a massive win against Brighton. And we have to mention the save that Navas made from Julio and Ciso in that one. Absolutely incredible stop.
Yeah, ridiculous. You talk about speed of reactions. I've watched this so many times and it's struck with such velocity how he's managed to react in the way that he has and the technique that he's used in order to get fingertips on it. Yeah, it's one of the best saves you'll see this season. Although, I don't think it's the best save this week. I'll be talking about that one later.
Oh, very gritty. Okay, look forward to getting onto that. But just to finish on Navas, so he has now faced 69 shots in the 14 games he's played. Just to offer a little perspective on that, that's the same amount as Ederson has faced in his 32 games.
Yeah, which is, and again, this goes back to where you see a lot of the models that are being created at the moment when it comes to XG affecting goalkeepers, and they are effectively playing two different games. You know, it always makes me laugh. Even now, you still see the most number of saves in the league, and it's just such a nonsense statistic to have up there. Ederson, Alisson, in fact, Alisson's had more of a chance this season, but Ederson will never have a chance of topping the most saves, of course, which is where, as I mentioned, you're seeing more and more of the stats improving in the goalkeeping world, because there is that realization that, of course, if you're playing in a Nottingham Forest, by law of averages this season, you'll make twice as many mistakes as the likes of Ederson. In the same way, you'll also make twice as many great saves. So it really does need that educated eye in order to analyze a goalkeeper playing for two different clubs like this.
It does indeed. And just to stay on stats, I know it's not a stat that we're particularly fond of, but save percentage, Fulham 1, Manchester City 2, and Bernd Leno, who tops save percentage in the Premier League this season, put in another very decent performance against Man City. So good saves from Jack Grealish, from Ilkay Gundogan, from Julian Alvarez, and from Erling Haaland, I think, which was the pick of the bunch. All of those denied. He has been quite a good acquisition, hasn't he, for Fulham?
I think he's been brilliant. I think that, I know there were times at Arsenal when a few people questioned him, but I think every Fulham supporter that I've spoke to can't speak highly enough about him. And I mentioned my save of the week. It was that one against Erling Haaland. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. And that for me is where you watch his movement beforehand, where you go from that kind of half goal where the cross is coming in, you then go back and you then cover your front half of the goal when you then retreat to the line. But the speed at which he gets down to his right, when you actually watch how he sets, and he's so neutral in his set, and Haaland's absolutely smashed this in the bottom corner. It's a perfect connection. You could not do any more Erling Haaland in this moment. And this ordinarily is a goal. I say this a lot, but I can't think of many goalkeepers that make the save, because there's so much to it. There's so much to the movement beforehand, making sure you set effectively, the speed at which you need to get down, the technique used to get the hand down as quickly as he can. I just thought it was a phenomenal save. One of the best saves I've seen this season.
And Edison, in that game too, are we saying good goalkeeping or bad goalkeeping? The ball over the top, the recovery that he made after letting it slip. I thought the second phase of this was excellent goalkeeping.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, second phase. I think we've seen a lot this weekend. And again, I don't know whether that's where pitches become a little bit drier, and they are tough to deal with, those through balls that kind of hold up a little bit at the edge of the box. You don't know if they're going to make the box or not, if you're going to get there before the defender, before the striker. And we've seen a few of them this weekend in particular. And again, you've also got things as well. I'm not saying this is the case here, but things that people don't necessarily take into account, where sometimes a through ball might be getting played and you've got the sun in the background, you've got the crowd in the background. You haven't necessarily got full gauge of where the ball's going. And I've definitely said this before, in that sometimes those through balls that seem to be coming almost straight at you are harder to deal with the ones that are just going on a slight angle, because you can't quite get the depth perception. And as mentioned, there's been a few goalies that have been caught out by that this weekend. And certainly Edison was in this occasion, but he did recover very, very well. And it's a tough one because you're scrambling in that moment. He's half on the floor. He's trying to prevent the goal as best he can. But what he does really well is, and it's so unorthodox, he's almost lying on his front. He gets his left hand and wraps it around. And yeah, real high risk of giving away a penalty here, potentially a red card, although I don't think it would have been. There's someone on the line, but potentially a penalty, potentially a red card. But he does it perfectly, where he wraps his left hand around and gets a full palm to the ball. I don't know if it went to VAR or not, but I think if it had gone to VAR, then certainly, you know, he's executed it perfectly, like a well-timed challenge in the box. So yeah, certainly an excellent recovery after a difficult moment beforehand.
There have been some whispers this season, for arguably the first time, from City fans that Edison is a bit of a weak link in the Man City side. What do you make of this? Because again, just referring to save percentage, which we can't draw too much from, but I think from the first time since he came into the Premier League, he's actually quite low on that. So he's in the bottom three for save percentage this season. Then there just have been just a few grumbles from City fans that maybe his standards aren't as high as they have been in previous campaigns.
Well, I certainly haven't seen that. I think the other bit with save percentage, why it's not necessarily overly accurate, is that you just gave that stat there, that how many shots was it that Edison's faced this season?
69.
Yeah, so it's not a great number of shots. So that can be skewed quite easily, you know. And actually, look, I'm trying to think back to goals that I've seen that I thought, oh, Edison could have done better. There's very few. You know, sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens in teams, you know, like that. Again, depending on the way that they play, and they are trying to be very expansive, playing out from the back, they're going to get caught out from time to time. As good as they are, and they're arguably the best in the world at it, there will be a handful of goals each season that will come from that. So, of course, if that is the case, and it's a one-on-one that they're scoring, and they're getting more one-on-ones against them as an argument, I don't know, again, if this is statistically true, but let's just use this as an example. Because of the way they play, it might be that when they do concede a chance, which is quite rare, that it is arguably a bigger chance than, you know, teams that are having shots from distance and playing a different style of football. So I think save percentage is a difficult one. I'd certainly love to see how he compares on the whole XG this season. My gut says he'll be fine. Might not be in the top few, but certainly I'd expect him to be middle of the road at least. And again, it's such a small part of what a goalkeeper does now. You know, we talk a lot. I mean, him, I've got no doubt his percentages and his distribution stats will be number one. And certainly if you're a Man City and you're looking for a goalkeeper to fit your team, that is going to be that much more important anyway than the save percentage, the XG, etc. As long as you've got someone who is more than capable, which he obviously is when it comes to saving shots aerially, but you know you've got a superpower in terms of playing out and the amount of goals that he'll create directly or indirectly by the way that he plays, he's still worth so many more goals than any other goalkeeper I can think of in that particular Man City team.
Bournemouth 4, Leeds 1, and continuing the theme of goalkeepers like Keylor Navas and Bernd Leno, continuing the theme, of course, of decent acquisitions made by football clubs. Neto of Bournemouth, a really good acquisition from them. And some good saves in this one. He's made some very good saves in recent games this season, especially the double save at the weekend from Robin Koch and Willie Nonto.
Yeah, good save this. Good save. It was one that... So for the first of the two saves, he does make look a little bit extravagant, but I don't mind it in the fact that he's trying to get the ball away. So it's one where it's a good reaction, but you can almost see that it's almost, he doesn't punch it, but it is almost like a punch with his palm. And there is a real thought behind it in that I want to get this ball as far away as I can. And in fairness to him, he gets it to the edge of the box, but he's very quick to get himself up, get himself back on his feet, react to then dive full stretch to his left, get two good hands on it and put it round the post. And yeah, as you mentioned, a huge credit to Bournemouth because what they've done, certainly at one point in the season, you felt after a positive start that they were going to fade away and it could be a relegation. But the way that they've fought back the last couple of months has just been extraordinary. And certainly he's been a big part of that.
A quick word on Ian Melier as well, because we spoke about him, I think it was last week, wasn't it, in the defeat to Fulham, and questioned whether he should have been questioned for the two goals conceded. There were two in this one that he was definitely questioned for. The second, scored by Jefferson Lerma, a cross coming over and another parry out to Lerma. And the final goal, scored by Antoine Semenyo. That one, you'd have to say, was very similar to what you describe all the time, where if you get a hand to it, it ends up looking a lot worse because it looks like you should have saved it.
Yeah, I think that these... both of these he'll be disappointed with. I know that we spoke about his goals in the previous game and certainly were defending him in a big way in that. I think that this was, again, the situations that we've all faced. Every goalkeeper listening in. So that cross, he's got there a little bit too early and then he finds himself not able to get the purchase on the jump in order to catch it. And he's left with that decision when he realises the ball's ever so slightly too high. He's not going to be able to catch it and his immediate reaction is just to try and parry it into a safe area. And it's so tough when you've got no real momentum, you've got there a little bit early, you're not attacking it with pace, and so you end up kind of just hoping really that the area that you parry it into is safe and that you get away with it is the expression I'll probably use. And unfortunately for him, he puts it straight into an area. The lad finishes it very well and he'd have to hold his hands up and suggest that he could do a bit more. And in terms of what he could have done, you know, that is that one that ideally you wait just a split second longer. You can then approach the ball with that much more momentum, get a little bit more height on your jump. Either that, or if, you know, once he'd got there, if there was a way in which he could have taken a step back and almost caught it arching back, or as a last case scenario, if he is going to palm it, can he, and we had a similar one last week, I forget who the goalkeeper was, but can he then maybe help it on as opposed to put it back into play? So certainly one that he'll be a little bit frustrated with. And similarly, the second one, only for the fact that, and again, something we talk about a lot on the podcast, where it just comes down to different styles. You know, the fact that he's gone with his hands, whereas look at David De Gea, we use him as an example a lot for this type of shot. There's no chance he's even thinking about going with his hands. This is just moving the foot, a big side foot, and then making a solid save. Whereas you can see Melier's decision here is to try and collapse on the ball, and it's that awkward corridor where it's, yeah, in between feet, in between hands. You can't quite collapse on it, and it always looks that bit worse because ordinarily you'll get something on it and it kind of squirms over the line. Whereas I think in a perfect world, if you're the type of goalkeeper that can switch quickly between the foot save and collapsing down to your left, then you kind of take out that corridor. But in this case, he wasn't able to.
Do you know what I don't think helps Melier's cause in some ways? Is that he has a bit of a resting sad face when he's playing football. I don't know whether he's like this all the time, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, but sometimes you see him on camera and he just looks so sad. He looks so upset.
I mean, maybe this is something the goalkeeper coach needs to work with him on, you know, just to have just a pleasant... it's funny, actually. I said this... I was watching the United game. It's funny how you'll make... or you'll see someone and you get a certain feeling because of an expression. And I said, when I was watching, I don't know too much about outfield football, I don't really care, but I was watching the United game and Antony, I was watching for a bit and they zoomed in on him. I thought, he just looks a bit unlikable, you know? And I said, I don't know why, but I'm looking at him and I don't get a good feeling from him, you know? So maybe look, and again, that might be my preconceived ideas or the way that I'm wired, I don't know. But I was like, I just don't feel good when I look at him. I don't like him. I don't know him. What's he doing? What is it that he's doing that is giving me this feeling? So look, maybe this is the next stage for goalkeeper coaches that they can work on facial expressions.
Can I pull you up on something you just said there as well about outfielders and the fact that you don't really know too much about outfielders and you don't really care? So I get where you're coming from with that. But the whole point of us doing this podcast is to try and educate about goalkeeping, right? Because there's not been enough goalkeeping analysis. Is there an argument here that if you were a goalkeeper coach, which you're not, and you never will be, I'd imagine, but if you were a goalkeeper coach, that actually you do need to care about outfielders and you do need to know more about football outside of goalkeeping in order to improve your coaching as a goalkeeper coach.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that, of course. I think if you're... Well, of course, because then it's also... Obviously, in terms of what a goalkeeper does, it's not... Yeah, of course, we're not completely separate. And I know I said that a little bit flippantly. We're not completely separate, of course. It's not like them and us. And if anything, I know part of what we're looking to do is to try and bridge that gap somewhat. But then I would still argue that for a goalkeeper coach, it's more what relates to the goalkeepers. Yeah, you need to know a lot of the general stuff in terms of the ideas the management have. And no doubt you'll pick that up anyway with the number of meetings that all these teams have now. But I think that it's more a case of maybe understanding outfielders so that you can then help the goalkeeping department that much more. I mean, what I found interesting, it's like on a bit of a tangent, but I'll mention it because they got promoted and I found this very... And also the fact they've scored the most goals in the country, in that Ipswich Town brought in Lee Grant to be an attacking coach, to be a striker coach. And the reason is because he knows how goalkeepers operate. So it's almost the opposite. Does that make sense? They brought him in and they've scored, what, 100 goals or whatever it is this season. They've been, so if anything, which I said to Grantley, I said, I'm absolutely delighted for you. I did text him this. So I said, at the same time, you're giving away all our secrets. But of course he is, because the whole point is he's saying to the strikers, you're doing this, you know, you're doing this type of shot. A goalkeeper likes this, hates this, etc. You think how powerful that is. And again, how much impact he's had, I don't know. But the fact that they're the leading scorers in the league, I find that quite interesting. So I bring that back to what you asked. I think then for a goalkeeper coach, it is that similarly kind of understanding the outfield so that you can help the goalkeepers that much more, knowing what strikers do, knowing in terms of the pattern of play where the outlets might be in certain situations, etc. Of course, that's vitally important, and knowing your players as to what strengths, weaknesses they may have, again, is vitally important. But certainly when it comes to this show, then it is very much goalkeeping.
It is indeed. And what a creative way to look at things from Ipswich. Maybe we'll see more of that in the future. What we hopefully won't see too much more of were two bits of playing out from the back from Jose Sarr in Wolves' rollicking at the hands of Brighton. Brighton 6, Wolves 0. One resulted in the sixth and final goal from Sarr. There's a chance, maybe, not potentially as a result of this, but with just a couple of games left and Wolves seemingly safe from Premier League relegation, that we might see a number two pop into that number one spot.
Yeah, it could be interesting how it plays out. Certainly, from what I've heard, Dan Bentley's been doing very well there and very much knocking on the door. So I would expect to see some game time for him back end of this season. And it might come now. I mean, it was a tough afternoon for Sarr, I think it's fair to say. And I mean, from a goalkeeper's point of view, it's always difficult when you're beaten heavily and there's one or two moments in the game that haven't necessarily gone your way. It's always tough to find positives in a performance like that. And certainly the couple of moments that we're talking about playing out, I felt from a bit on the first in that it's a pass back to him from about 4 yards. And again, I get it that goalkeepers now are very much trained and told to play a certain way, look to play at all costs at times. And certainly in this situation, I can't help but feel that's one of those moments where a goalkeeper should just clear their lines. You know, when you've literally got no room to operate in, you're trying to play, bounce a first-time pass into the sitting midfielder. I just think there's so much risk attached to this, and we see it go wrong so often. I just think when it's that tight, I do still think the wise play is to go as long and as far as you can. And certainly the second one, I can't help but feel that might have been more of a, and this was obviously for the sixth goal, that might have been more just a case of where the game was at, in that it was an odd pass to play. Like, you could just see that maybe he lost a little bit of confidence on the day, and you've got a defender 3 yards away who is, you know, he's got attackers nearby. It just wasn't a wise play in that moment. He did have other options, but he's played the pass and instantly put the defender in trouble. And it's a lovely finish, it has to be said, phenomenal finish. But yeah, I'm sure that the manager would have been questioning, out of all the options he had, why he chose that pass.
Just a couple more games to finish in the Premier League. Newcastle 3, Southampton 1, and an interesting change at the Saints. So Gavin Batsunu, who had played every single Premier League game this season, has been out for the past two. Alex McCarthy now in.
Yeah, which, look, I think from, and we spoke about Batsunu a lot on this pod, and I think on the whole, for a first season in the Premier League, there's a lot that he can be very happy with. Again, my gut says that this is just a case of not long left to go in the season. They're desperate to stay up, which is looking increasingly unlikely now. And of course, McCarthy having that much more experience, and certainly with Batsunu, it's only I don't know if it's even his third full season, because he had a full season, of course, last season. It was at Rochdale, wasn't he, before that? I don't know if that was a full season, just a half season. But again, it is this kind of situation where you'll certainly find that a lot of managers will at that point, if they've got someone who's been through a similar situation, that then might make a bit more sense. So I don't think it's necessarily anything against Gavin Batsunu. I think they still see him very much as the long-term plan to be the number one for many, many years. But I think in this current predicament, they've just looked at it and thought, actually, we've got a goalkeeper in his 30s who's been through this, that, the other, played a lot of Premier League football. Maybe that just makes a bit more sense for the last few games of the season.
And as close to a klaxon as possible for Nick Pope, I think, for that third goal scored by Callum Wilson.
Yeah, lovely kick. Lovely big kick downfield. He actually really caught this well. It was a pass back that he's hit first time, and it must have gone 80 yards. In fact, the second bounce is in the opposition box, causes mayhem. Of course, it's finished. So, yeah, I would have loved to have seen it finished by the guy that actually did get through, so we could have sounded the klaxon for Nick Pope. But yeah, look, again, I know we spoke about this a minute ago about Jose Sarr and that situation. I think Nick Pope, certainly when it comes to distributing long, you know, from the games that I've seen, he's ordinarily very, very accurate. And he does get big distance, which even at Premier League level now, as much as teams are trying to play that much more, it just shows you how powerful having that as a tool in your armoury really is.
And finishing at Old Trafford, Manchester United 1, Aston Villa 0. David De Gea, another decent stop this time from Alex Moreno. Looked quite good in midweek as well against Spurs. He is now leading the way for clean sheets in the Premier League. And Emi Martinez, I think every so often, Emi Martinez puts in a very Emi Martinez type of performance. And this was one of them. A few good saves in this one. A really good save, actually, from Marcel Sabitzer, although given as a goal kick. To confirm, Richard, touch or no touch?
Yeah, I thought it was a touch. I was watching this live, and at the time I thought no one commented on it. No one was even looking at it. There was actually a really good save he made early on at the near post when he came out and spread and made the save with the left foot. And again, it bugged me because I was kind of listening to the commentators and they managed to talk about the whole situation for about a minute and not mention the save once. You know, they were talking about the through ball, the finish, the this, the that. Didn't mention the save once. I thought it was an excellent save. A really good reading of the game. Came out, got to a good distance. Excellent spread, big save. A couple of other good saves in this as well, as you mentioned. But it was interesting that it wasn't mentioned.
Can I just ask you about the goal as well? Because I think purely from a technical standpoint, what would you recommend doing here as a goalkeeper? Or did he indeed do the right thing?
I think he did, because I watched this a few times. So tough because, and again, I haven't seen it from behind the goal, but my guess is this would have been touch and go, whether it was going in the far corner anyway. It might have been sneaking past the post, in which case, yeah, had he left it, of course, it would have gone for a goal kick. But, you know, as a goalkeeper, you can never necessarily take that chance. And then, of course, we're taught to parry wide, which is exactly what he's done. And you actually even see the finish. It's so unfortunate for him, really, because it takes a deflection, which kind of then loops it up over him and the guy on the line and nestles in the net. So I think if he has the same situation again, I think he does the same thing again. You know, if anything, the touch might be ever so fainter, so it goes even wider or even out for a corner. But I don't think he's necessarily done anything wrong here. And I think even once you go into the next phase of play and he's then got himself into a good position, the likelihood of scoring from that angle is still quite low. But as I mentioned, he's a little bit unfortunate with the deflection.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where Anthony Patterson continued the many plaudits that he's received this season, palming out a deflected Ismail Assar cross. Sunderland coming back to draw that one against Watford. Jamie Jones with a bit of up and down for Wigan, and sadly down as a collective for the Latics now. They are back to League One. A great first half save from Lucas Joao. Look frustrated, however, at the late equaliser from Yaku Meite. And Lee Nichols back in for Huddersfield. Quite a rapid recovery from him. He had a shoulder surgery indeed, in January, but back in for the Terriers and a big win at Cardiff.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on Lee Nichols because, yeah, huge credit to him for getting himself back as quickly as he did. And a big call this one, because Thomas Vashlik has done very well since joining him. Of course, they were bottom of the league when he joined. They find themselves now, it looks like they should be safe, certainly after this particular result. I think they just need one more point from their last couple of games. But big, big call this, because certainly when a goalkeeper's been doing well, of course, Lee Nichols is the outright one there and a big asset of the football club. So So you always had the feeling that when he was fit, they would reinstate him. But you did wonder whether it would be this game, certainly the size of this game. But again, it does take, for me, a big character to step in to a game like that. When you know the size of it, you haven't played a game of football for, what, 4 or 5 months, or whatever it must be now. And for him to step in and play as well as he did, I think he might have had one or two issues with distribution, which is always natural, I think, when you've been out for a period of time. But I thought, on the whole, he looked very, very good. And for them to get the win in the way that they did, and as good as secure safety for another season, yeah, hugely impressed.
Into League One, Ellery Balcombe returning for a spot of hokey cokey keeping to finish the season at Bristol Rovers. Connor Ripley helping to keep Morecambe hanging by a thread. Huge saves and a huge third successive win, which means relegation will go to the final day in League One. Very exciting there. And Harvey Cartwright, given his first start at Wickham, but not really having the best day in a 3-0 home defeat to Cheltenham. And we should just mention James Trafford too, sharing the Young Player of the Season award with Connor Bradley at Bolton.
Yeah, a few things to talk about there. Felt for Harvey Cartwright, one of those horrible ones that's looped into the box from a long, long way. Again, just got under it ever so slightly, wasn't able to hold it, and it's that horrible moment when it breaks free and they're able to put it into the empty net. I do think with a lot of goals like this or moments like this, that is just a case of game time, you know, and it's so difficult when you haven't played for a period of time or it's been limited and so on and so forth. You know, there's certainly a lot of quality there. But no doubt once he does find that platform and gets a regular run of games, you know, I've heard some really good things about him, so I'm sure he'll kick on and do some impressive things. The other save I just wanted to mention was Ellery Balcombe. I thought this was really good just for the fact that he's drawn to the ball initially for the through ball. Defender cuts out. I think it then goes to the attacker from memory, who then shoots it low to his left. But I just thought it was a really nice one in terms of he backpedaled to the point where he knew the shot was about to come in. He couldn't set where he wanted to set. It was a good 7 or 8 yards out still. But I just thought he set really well, set really quickly, got down brilliantly to his right-hand side to make the save. And I think that's, you know, we talk about goalkeeping where it isn't always black and white. There's so many moments where you have to improvise. And I just thought in that moment, deciding to set where he did allowed him that opportunity to make the save, and then the goalkeeping thereafter was excellent.
And finally, in League Two, Mark Oxley helping Harrogate to a safety with some big stops in recent weeks. Two coming in the win at Mansfield on Saturday. Lucas Akins and Ollie Clark brilliantly denied there. Brad House in for a first ever professional start for Sutton. Off, however, after 29 minutes, you have to feel for him. Red carded for a foul on Tyree Sinclair in what ended up being a 4-1 defeat at Rochdale. And Lewis Jones, not played in the EFL since January last year, given a run against Colchester in a series of good saves and a clean sheet and win. And Glenn Morris, will mention him too, at 39, given the Player of the Year award at Gillingham.
Yeah, a big well done to Glenn. Certainly, second half of the season, I've watched quite a lot of their games, and yeah, he's been excellent. To be fair to him, and just wanted to give Lewis Jones a mention. One of the lads that I work with, and I know he's had a really tough time, you know, with injury, and certainly the last year or two, he's been a bit frustrating where he's not been able to break in, not really given too much of a chance, but certainly given a chance in this one. And again, similarly, where we're talking about lads not having played for a while, coming in, naturally you're going to be a little bit more nervous. You know, it's going to feel fresh again. And I actually watched this game and thought he was excellent throughout. Some of the saves he made, great tip over the bar, good save at the far post, got the Man of the Match award, and deservedly so.
We should mention here as well, just to encompass all three tiers of the EFL, that the teams of the season were announced. And now, we forgot to mention this in the last podcast, so we should give a huge round of applause to Ben Wilson in the Championship. Quite the achievement that, to be named goalkeeper of the season in the Championship. In League One, it was Michael Cooper, and in League Two, it was Lawrence Vigouroux. Interestingly, however, not a single goalkeeper named in the shortlist for the Player of each division. I guess to be expected.
Yeah, and I know this was a conversation, was it Courtois, I think, brought this up at some point from memory when it came to this type of thing. And look, it is what it is. I think from the goalkeeper's point of view, to be named in the team of the year is huge. And as you mentioned, some names there and pleasing for all of them. Obviously, Lawrence Vigouroux, yeah, we spoke a lot. The fact that he's already claimed the clean sheet club, which is the one that he really wanted, of course. So this was just another addition to that, no doubt. I'm sure the clean sheet club award will go ahead of League Two goalkeeper of the season. But for the other two as well, great story, certainly with Michael Cooper, the injury. that he's had. I'm sure this will be a bit of a silver lining. The fact that they've still managed to get promotion, so no doubt he'll get his chance again in the championship at some point soon, which is great for him. And then Ben Wilson, quite an amazing story, really, in that he stepped in after a game, a bit of an unknown quantity at championship level, it's fair to say, but I think he's been excellent throughout. The number of clean sheets, obviously, as much as that is only a part of the story, but certainly given how well Coventry have done and the fact that he stepped in, they've not even considered, you know, bringing someone else in, which you sometimes see when maybe a number two at the time steps in, then you get to the January window, they might look to bring someone else in. They didn't even consider that because of how well he's done, and he just continued that. And certainly he's very much now established himself as a top championship goalkeeper. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, we move on to my least favourite part of the show, but there's only a couple left now. That's the good news. It is, of course, Clean Sheet Club. Starting the Premier League, Jason Steele, Super Seagull, David De Gea, every game since the start of last season. That's the only two in the Premier League. Into the Championship, Ben Wilson, Stanley Stopper, Senny Dieng, Champ Man. Only two in the Championship. Wow. Into League One, James Trafford, Cockermouth, Casillas. Simon Eastwood, two on the spin to keep the U's in League One. Christian Walton, hat-trick. Will Norris, where there's a will, there's a way. Ellery Balcombe, second stalemate. Callum Burton, do the Burtman. Cam Dawson, on the prowl. Luke Southwood, first ever, ever present. Into League Two, Corey Adai. D-D-D-D-Die-Die. Okay, you have to explain that one, Matt. Owen Evans, feeling liberal. Jonathan Mitchell, account open. Ben Hinchcliffe, 8-12. Timotei Lototala, up, up and away. And Lewis Jones, keeping up with the Donny.
Very good, Richard. Very good. So the table. Now, we may have just spoken slightly ahead of ourselves because even though Lawrence Vigouroux will be crowned the Clean Sheet Club King, he may still be joined. It may still be a joint win. And that's because who knows what would have happened in midweek had Lawrence Vigouroux played for the O's in midweek. But Sam Sargent came in for the game in midweek, which leaves Lawrence Vigouroux on 24 clean sheets with one game to play. Christian Walton is on 23 clean sheets with one game to play. Ipswich are away at Fleetwood, which is something of a dead rubber, although Ipswich obviously hoping to be champions of League One, so no doubt will be going all out for the victory there. Leyton Orient are away to Bradford, who, depending on their result in midweek, will either be fighting for the playoffs or potentially automatic promotion on the final day. So it's all very gritty.
It really is. Okay, so we've got an interesting finale. So Lawrence Vigouroux, we can't put those flip-flops on just yet.
Not quite yet, no. And even though we've alluded to it already in the pod, I just wanted to speak about this because there were 15 goalkeeping changes in the past few weeks or so. No doubt there will be more on the final day too. So we've spoken about McCarthy coming in for Batsunu, Cartwright coming in for Striek at Wickham, and Lewis Jones coming in for Mitchell at Doncaster. Elsewhere, Bailey Peacock-Farrell, he came in for Aaron Muric at Burnley. Stephen McMullen, who's courted quite a few headlines in recent weeks, he came in for Jay Lynch for his debut, and a clean sheet at 18 years old at Fleetwood. Vaslav Hladký came on for the final few minutes of Ipswich's win over Exeter for Christian Walton. We've seen Jed Ward and now Ellery Balcombe come in for James Belshaw at Bristol Rovers. Sam Sargent coming in for Lawrence Vigouroux in midweek. Tom Booth for Dave Richards. That was a debut at 18 for Crewe. Brad Howes, we've spoken about, coming on for Jack Rose. Nick Townsend and Joe Day, not quite the same because those two kind of flip-flop throughout the season. But Jackson Smith on for Owen Evans at half-time. I think this one was due to injury, but he's on loan from Wolves. That was a pro debut for him, as it was for Tom Smith in at Colchester for the past five games. He's on loan from Arsenal. And Nathan Broom, also in and out, similar to Joe Day and Nick Townsend, with Nick Zanev in recent weeks, but given the nod at the weekend.
Yeah, and look, you often see it this time of the season, and yeah, I quite like it, to be honest. I think that certainly for teams that know where they're going to be, you know, whether that's promotion, relegation, of course, mid-table and nothing necessarily to play for, I think it is the perfect opportunity, you know, and certainly with a lot that might have decisions as well on some of these lads as to whether they're getting a contract for the following year, whether they're potentially a number one in the waiting. Well, this is as good of an opportunity that you're going to get in order to see that. It does surprise me a bit when you see teams that are maybe mid-table, don't have much to play for, and I don't know, especially the ones, and there's a couple of examples, and I won't go into it just now, but maybe they've got a goalkeeper on loan and they've got one of their own goalkeepers as a two or a three, and they're still playing the lone goalkeeper until the very, very end, where you kind of feel like, well, maybe this is your chance now just to give one of your own goalkeepers a bit of a chance. So, yeah, look, I like to see it. I think that, you know, I know that there's certain rules and regulations when it comes to changing teams, and clubs always have to be on the right side of that. But I think that where possible for goalkeepers, looking at it purely from a goalkeeping perspective, I know that if I was a number two, that was how I got my proper chance, to be honest. It was at Watford. Initially, it was actually before we had a couple of big cup games. I think it was an FA Cup semi-final and quarter-final. They gave me the games before to protect Alec Chamberlain, and then they gave me the final two games of the season. And really, that helped me get on the map. And I think on the back of that, I got a call up to the 21s and so on and so forth. And I think that, you know, I look back now, that was such a big stepping stone into professional football. So, no, really pleased for the lads that you mentioned.
On the flip side of that, when a lone goalkeeper like Harvey Cartwright comes in for a game, like Jackson Smith comes in for a game, is that just the club doing the right thing by the goalkeeper? Because that goalkeeper will be leaving at the end of the season.
No, I think it's a bit different. I think that you got it both ways. You got maybe the lone goalkeeper. There's a lot of goalkeepers on loan in League One and League Two that have played the entire season and done a very good job. And you kind of do wonder that maybe the last couple of games, do they then give one of the other goalkeepers who are maybe permanent fixtures at the club some game time? And I think they should, in my opinion. Again, I know managers want to finish as high as they can and put out the strongest team a lot of the time until the very last kick. And then the other way around is that a good example there you gave of Jackson Smith being an example where he's gone in to Walsall very much as a number two. Owen Evans is very much the number one. But no doubt he'll have done a good job in training and been good around the place and certainly played his part in Walsall's finish to the season. So I think it's then also quite nice. And it then helps the relationship as well between Walsall and Wolves in this case, where it's a look. And actually, sometimes you find that you can't necessarily put it into a contractual agreement, but you can have a gentleman's agreement to be like, look, all right, they'll come on loan in that particular role, which doesn't necessarily move them forward at all by being a two in League One, League Two. But if you are safe with a game or two to go, can you give him a little bit of game time just so it can help them get on the map? And sometimes clubs will use that as a bit of a hook as to, yeah, they're coming in as a two. We need a solid two. But if there is an opportunity, then we will give them some game time.
And finally, to finish then, Richard, we just thought we'd throw in a couple of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper.
So the first took place in Ligue 1 between Lorient and PSG. Yvonne Mvogo, the Lorient goalkeeper, thought he'd been awarded a free kick. Not so, which saw Kylian Mbappe steal in. Lorient did actually win the game 3-1. But you don't like to see these.
No. Strange situation. Again, it's just one of those. If you think you've heard a whistle, then you throw the ball down. You know, we've all done it and we're convinced we've heard a whistle. And that's obviously what's happened here. I do just wonder, I mean, look, I suppose a striker's never going to, especially if the team are losing, etc., they're never going to pass up the opportunity to put it into an empty net and score a goal, I guess. But it almost seems a bit ungentlemanly. You know, it's not like it's, he didn't mean it. It was one where he thinks he's heard a whistle, so he's put the ball down. But look, it is what it is. I don't really know what you can learn from this. There's not a lot, because then you don't want to be the goalkeeper that's kind of like asking the referee over and over if he's blown his whistle. So I think it's just one of those things.
And over in the US, the brilliantly named Bella Bixby scored a dramatic last-minute back heel. So this ended up being a 3-3 draw. She plays for Portland Thorns. It was a draw against Angel City. Not a bad goal, this. Nice bit of improvisation.
Lovely little back heel, yeah. And another example of a goalkeeper coming up and causing havoc, which, again, I love the fact that since we spoke about this a month or so ago, we've seen so many goalkeeping goals. And it was a lovely finish. Ball crossed in, ball drops probably about 4 or 5 yards out, and she's facing the wrong way. And, yeah, as you say, great little bit of improvisation. Lovely little flick into the net, and celebrations ensued.
She's only the second goalkeeper, Richard, to score in the NWSL. You know what I'm going to ask you next, don't you?
Name the other. I'm struggling with this one.
It was a goalkeeper named Michelle Batos. She scored also for Portland, actually, in a draw with FC Kansas City back in 2015. Michelle Batos. So there we go. Okay, Richard, this has been nothing but a pleasure. Quite manic you are now, aren't we? Final week of the season leading into pre-season. This is when it really starts to ramp up.
It does, yeah. No doubt we'll be bringing back GKs on their way at some point soon. Indeed, look forward to that. But yes, there's lots of conversations going on at the moment. And of course, it will be a busy, busy summer in the goalkeeping world. Probably busier than ever before, I think, from my calculations.
Okay, and if you are listeners listening to this prior to 7 p.m. on Monday evening, we should just remind you that this evening on Sky Sports Monday Night Football, there will be a goalkeeper on the panel, the game between Leicester and Everton. This is very exciting, isn't it, Richard? Because Mr. Kasper Schmeichel will be taking the stand.
Yes, and I've said this so many times. I really hope this is the role that he ends up going into. Again, I'm sure he's got another couple of years left in him. They had a good win again yesterday. I've seen Nice actually get another clean sheet for Kasper. But I really hope he's the type, because again, he is very knowledgeable. He's not afraid to speak his mind. And ordinarily, he is very accurate in what he says and his analysis on goalkeepers. So I know, of course, Graham Souness is moving on. So look, there is a seat there to be filled.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.